Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
The movie then in the end is this swirling document of a happening. You're within the four walls of this arena for one night only. You span the time, the width and the breadth of the show. You're in the stands, you're backstage, you're on stage, and you go through this, emotional, musical, performative experience with all these humans in a space.
Welcome to the True False Podcast. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, I talked with documentary filmmakers Bill and Turner Ross about their approach in contemporary color, a film that immerses viewers so fully that the filmmakers are more like maestros orchestrating a listening experience than guides pointing to scenes through a pane of glass. The Ross brothers have made several films, including Western and Chapatulas. Contemporary color was featured at True False's Boondoddle, a summer bike ride along the Katy Trail that ends on the bluff tops above the Missouri River, with a local foods dinner and a film screening. Contemporary color began as a project by David Byrne of the Talking Heads. It paired some of the country's best color guard teams with original songs by the likes of Nelly Furtado, Tune Yards, and St. Vincent. After months of rehearsal, they came together for live performances that featured both the choreographed color guards and the onstage music. Byrne approached Bill and Turner Ross about filming the project. A quick warning, there's some swear words in this episode.
It's all of a piece, yeah, because it's a really weird, eclectic thing. And it's for me, it's still a little bit hard to pitch the idea of the movie because when the show was pitched to us, we didn't know what the hell to make of it.
That's Turner Ross.
We were called into a meeting with David, who had this idea for a show. And he explained it to us. It was going to be a lot of flags and, rifles
and sabers.
And musicians. And it just all sounded really bizarre and a lot. It's like, oh, God, our next movie's going to be about color guard? I don't know, man.
And we love bizarre.
And that's Bill.
But this was a different type of bizarre.
Because we could see what that movie, it's like if you did the typical, lead up following the team to the big show type of thing. It's like, I don't know if that's our... I don't know if that's our gamut, if that's our best thing. But when we walked away and gave it a little space and thought about it, it was awesome because it's this whole other world, this whole other subculture, subgenre of artistic expression that within itself is profoundly affecting to all those involved. It also allowed us to really to take something that we've been fascinated with, which is the concert doc, the music film, the performance movie, which, there's certainly marquees of that genre, but to approach that in a different, meaningful way so as not to regurgitate, what's already been explored. And so, yeah, I guess the movie then in the end is this kind of swirling document of a happening. You're within the four walls of this arena for one night only. You span the time, the width and the breadth of the show. You're in the stands, you're backstage, you're on stage, and you go through this, emotional, musical, performative experience with all these humans in a space, and it's colorful and entertaining. And
if this is your elevator pitch, this is a very tall building.
Billy, if we had to do we suck at elevator, but that's why we don't make any money.
No, I mean, actually, that was one of my next questions was kind of wrapped into this, was how you all decided to approach it as a version of a concert doc or an event film and not by following, one person throughout the entire experience.
I don't know.
You're working with David Byrne, who's responsible for one of the greatest concert films of all time. You don't want to just delve back into that straightforward approach. Nor did we want to make a, emotional journey, with one character. Let's isolate this person because it was such a collective experience for the musicians, the stagehands, the kids on the floor, the people in our team making the movie. It was such an egalitarian experience where everybody was involved and everybody was invested. And so to truly isolate any of those one things for too long, I think would have weighted it down and really would have done an injustice to the actual experience of being there. And so we chose to take vignettes, little pieces of those things, and share them and sort of ride the currents of these experiences. So, you can have you can have this emotional uplift with music, or you can have this emotional uplift with a character, you know, go through this valley with somebody, but it's quick and passing, you know, like the music is fluid, these interactions are fluid. And it allowed us to go into these kids' heads for a brief period of time, but then also to be present. And it really, you know, our inspirations for this thing, although they sound comical, really did feed into what we wanted to do, which is things like professional wrestling from the 80s, where you'd have these really heavy-handed narratives, but you'd only get a little bit each time you went to the show. You know, it'd just be a little piece of the narrative. And so if you dropped into that world, it was just crazy. Or the Muppet Show, when you go backstage with Kermit and he's just frazzled and doesn't know what to do, and then all of a sudden you're with Statler and Waldorf up in the stands, and then all of a sudden you're on stage, and then maybe you're in the audience blowing yourself up. But it's just all these little pieces.
This was our
moving
actual
around.
This was our actual pitch to David,
who was totally into it. The first person who ever said, "Guys, that sounds great. You're rambling nonsensical stuff." Yeah, but that's, you know, that's really what we were after, because we love that in those environments, you are, one, completely welcomed in, and two, just absorbed, sucked into the life and current of these moving spaces. And that's what we wanted. We didn't want to, you know, create this artificial structure on it. It already has a structure. You're already in the space for this period of time. And we wanted to allow that to happen, but also to drift in and out.
Coming up, Bill and Turner Ross describe how they created a dreamy, disembodied feeling. Contemporary Color is set to span a one-night-only concert, with the film as long as the show itself. But the actual footage came from four nights of the same performance.
We were in the Barclays Center with complete control of everything, and a team working around us, and permission to do everything. You know, we had everything at our disposal, and this wild universe was swirling around us.
Hey listeners, it's Allison. If you're hearing this episode before or during True False, you should know it's not too late for you to experience the fest. You can hop in line and use the trusty queue system, or if you want to avoid the line, you can reserve your tickets with our gateway package. Visit truefalse.org or just walk to the box office for details. This is the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. Let's get back to our interview with the Ross brothers. I wanted to ask you about how you made editorial decisions about the drifting. For instance, I noticed sometimes we would meet someone and then, like one of the musicians, and then we would see a couple of songs, and then they would kind of pop up. And then, you know, maybe three acts later, their song would come on. And so it wasn't, you know, like here's A perform, here's B perform. What were you looking for when you looked at different pieces?
Anything that we do is to present the feeling that we had while we were there. And so wandering those hallways, you would bump into people throughout the show. And so we didn't want to set it up in the film as like, okay, here's this guy, and now we're going to see them perform, and that'll be that. Like, they are existing just as we are, and we're all floating through this, you know, through this space. And so, yeah, editorially, like, we just wanted we really fell in love with all these folks, and we wanted to continually pop in and see them, and where are they now, and are they up in the stands watching? Are they, you know, in the back, like, goofing off? Like, I don't know. We wanted this, like, very circular thing.
Kind of a stream of consciousness narrative rather than a predictable one, because the problem with the show and then our interludes and moving in and out is if you started to develop consistency, you developed an expectation, which then just took you out of it, because it's like, all right, song, thing, performer. I'm going to see him perform on stage. And it just became really tedious. And so, you know, as frustrating as it can be to occasionally, like, pull away from a song or wonder where the hell this is going, it's like, well, you can go anywhere you want to go and try to create some unpredictability so that this is a journey in which you can be surprised and kind of have these, you know, stream of consciousness movements through the space.
I really like that idea of having the viewer go on the same journey that you were on as you're doing it, making it really experiential, and kind of having that viewing experience mimic the actual experience of being there. I definitely felt like that when I was watching.
We had an interesting conversation a couple weeks ago. We were at an event where on a panel, people wanted to talk about VR, virtual reality, and whether that's the death of what we're doing and all of that. And this is kind of our own virtual reality experience. Like, you know, trying to what would happen if you dropped yourself in the space? Where would you go? Where would you look? What would you want to do? And for me, the difference between the two is, yeah, you could put on a headset and fly into this room and move around the space at will. But the actual experience of being there that we all got to have, really feeling the energy of the space and getting to know these people and feeling it out, really dictated the way that we constructed the film and the choices that we made and sort of the rhythms that we adhered to. Because it is different. You know, you really, the sense of being in that space with these people and the kineticism, the emotional kineticism of this space was something that stuck with us for a long time and really dictated how we did things.
Yeah. How would you describe the feeling of being in that space at that moment, just personally?
What was it like for you? It was awesome. That's a stupid word, but it's just like... It really just, you know, in the real sense, it was awesome. We were in the, you know, we make these small movies together. You know, we go out in the world, you know, with our little cameras and the two of us and sort of recklessly find things that we like. And in this experience, we were in the fucking Barclays Center with complete control of everything and a team working around us and permission to do everything. And that permission was access to this incredible event where you have hundreds of kids for whom this might as well be the Olympics. You know, it's the same energy, the same emotional outpouring. It's like they're just invested. They're waving flags at the Barclays Center. That's insane. People are paying attention to them. And, you know, it's not piped in music. On stage is St. Vincent. On stage is David Byrne. And so you got to think how these people were feeling and just kind of the response, the give and take of that. And just having access to be able to float around that world. You know, I think of, you know, aside from what we do, my favorite space is dream space. You know, you can do anything you want there. You can create anything you want. And this was a situation where we were very much in that dream space. You know, we had everything at our disposal and this wild universe was swirling around us. And we had all the tools in which we could say, send our people this direction, send our people this direction. I'm going to go climb up on stage right now and just kind of drifting through and allowing everybody to be themselves and capture this environment. It was astoundingly, it was profoundly emotional for me.
I've never been in the circus, but I would imagine this was fairly close to what that experience must be like. You know, we played sports growing up and it felt like that, you know, like a lot of nervous energy. You have one shot to perform, to do well, to kill it. And that was on the kids, that was on the musicians, that was on us making the film. So there's this very heightened sense of being for 3 hours. And then when it's all over, everyone rushed backstage. And it was this outpouring of emotion because we had all pulled off the show.
I can't like see myself not doing Comic Con.
Yeah.
Like they're
like
my
family thing.
Yeah, they're my most like precious friends, and I don't even know what I would do like in my life, like on weekends.
So there was, you know, it was like a lot of hugging. The kids were crying. You know, we were high-fiving and, you know, talking about what we were going to do after the fact.
When I walk out on the floor, I think of all those years of previous marchers who'd be dying to be in my shoes again out on that floor. So I live in the moment like that. I think about it as all those other people who have come before me.
Like, you can search miles and miles, different things. There's nothing like that feeling out on the floor.
Like, the next day, I remember, like, we all woke up and we just started texting each other, and we were just like, I'm so sad. And like profoundly sad that like summer camp was over and like this great journey that we had all gone on and a very intense journey that we had all gone on was now over. and it had felt sort of, you know, like a very, very bizarre dream. And I think that's what we had hoped that the film would feel like as well. And I think it does.
Next, the Ross brothers talk about shortening the distance between the people who are on stage and the people who are off stage, and how that's connected to giving subjects in the film equal weight.
Not allowing the interface that you buy with a ticket to be the interface of the movie, you know, so that you are actually having a humanistic experience where you're allowed to be behind David Byrne on stage, or you're allowed to be in the hallway with the kids upstairs.
Hey listeners, it's Allison. If you're hearing this before the fest, and maybe even if you're at True False right now, there's still time to check out Elemental, True False's reimagining of an escape room. Part puzzle, part art installation, Elemental is a no-words, no-numbers adventure about the building blocks of matter. Sounds mysterious? Might be. Check it out. For more information, visit truefalse.org. You're listening to the True False podcast presented by KBAA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we're talking with filmmakers Bill and Turner Ross about creating an immersive experience for the audience in their film Contemporary Color. First, a brief interlude. Tim Pilcher went behind the scenes to the True False lab, where everything from art installations to cue signs are made.
At an undisclosed location on the outskirts of downtown Columbia, artists and volunteers are working away on dozens of creative projects. For many, this has become a sort of ritual in the months leading up to True False. They gather here at the True False Lab to churn out the artistic ephemera that adorns the town during the festival. Rumor has it that lab is actually short for labyrinth, not laboratory, and if you ever get the chance to visit, you may understand why. It's unusually warm for mid-February, so some of the work has spilled outside. That's where I find artists Mark Steck, Daniel Hegarty, and Joseph Fisher working on their latest creation, the Buckyballs, three giant geodesic structures of wood and rope held together without any nails or fasteners. They look like they could collapse at any moment, but in fact the tension and compression of their unique design makes them exceptionally strong. Here's Mark.
Well, the Buckyball is from Buckminster Fuller, and he's the one who came up with the original concept of using rope and struts for tension, what's just called tensegrity. You can make any shape with this, so we kind of went off the spherical shape and had the idea of doing this, but then putting a swing in the center of it, so it kind of flexes and moves and has a little bit of a living organism quality to it.
You can find the Buckyballs this weekend outside of three True False venues: Cafe Berlin, Rose Music Hall, and the Picture House.
Let's get back to our interview with the Ross brothers. You said you have your language and you have to get it covered. What do you mean by that?
So there's a visual language, but also, and there's an intentionality behind that, sort of this humanizing of something. And in something as glossy as this situation, and as glossy as a lot of the imagery we were going to get was going to be, and there is a lot, and there's some gorgeous imagery in there, but we didn't want it all to be a glossy movie. There needs to be some humanizing of things. And so while we also, you know, built a team around that theory, we wanted to make sure that we were implementing that as well, and not allowing the interface that you buy with a ticket to be the interface of the movie, you know, so that you are actually having a humanistic experience, that you are allowed to have this fluid experience where you meander around, where you're allowed to be behind David Byrne on stage, or you're allowed to be in the hallway with the kids upstairs.
I feel like there's this kind of, when do you let the audience peel back that curtain between on stage and backstage? With this film, did you learn anything new about that? Because you had this very literal onstage, offstage thing to work with.
I want to think about that for a second. But a large discussion about the film was just, you know, watching the process of a performance being built. And we found that very interesting because I don't know. Like when I was a kid, like I'd watch like NBA games or I'd watch wrestling, and I'd be like, I wonder what's going on. Like we're being presented with this very constructed thing here, but I wonder what's going on, backstage. And I don't know, like maybe this film is satisfying my 8-year-old curiosity, but
our big,
I don't know, give that a
our
shot.
Our big goal on this was to alleviate celebrity, to alleviate the idea of celebrity, and just trying to shorten the distance between stage and backstage, and maybe trying to allow those things to mesh as well. It was our big hurdle with this one because you have some built-ins that could affect the movie in a major way. You know, you go in with some knowns, probably you go in with some idea of some of these celebrities, and that can be
like the musicians.
Yeah, the musicians, just known entities upon which you can project preconceived ideas. You bring all these things. You bring ideas of, there's an affectation to the way that you watch this thing. And so we wanted to be very aware of, one, allowing ourselves moments to be enamored of that, by that, and with that, share that experience, but also to try to create an empathetic space in which the kids were just as important as the musicians on stage, and the sleeping security guard was just as valid as the talking audience member. And for us, that was really the thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the moment where we had subtitled the audience, mm-hmm. And my first reaction when I heard that was like, wait, who is that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because I'm like, as a viewer, I'm like, if they're getting subtitles, they must be important, like what they have to say.
Well, they are important.
And they are. But also, they're just a regular viewer.
Yeah.
And so you're putting them on the same plane as David Byrne and...
Who's just a regular
who's
guy.
Who's just a regular person. And the girl who's worked 4 years of high school for the... Well, plus, 12 years of...
Yeah.
Doing color guard or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, very, very early on, it would... that conversation was like, when we came back to David with our idea, we were like, you're just as important as the people that are driving the trucks.
And that was also his mantra. And he very much, that was top down throughout the whole process. And that was very much, from a leadership stance in terms of bringing this together, that was definitely something that came down from the top and bred throughout the event. And in our own system, that was something, filmically, that's something that we wanted. And so, it worked out from the four, the shared philosophies. But it was, it's the same principle as approaching this and not making just another concert doc. Concert film is like, how can we do something different? How can we do more than onstage, backstage, and how can we shorten that distance? I don't know. It was a fun exercise because you have so many people bringing so much, fans, color guarders, that, and even more than, say, like David Byrne fans watching this movie. He's one performer in the movie. It's more like, how are we going to deal with the thousands of color guard fans who are really going to critique the fact that we cut away from the performance? Like, you can't cut away in the middle, man.
We did a
your Twitter blows up. Oh, angry color.
It has. We did a screening for the kids this past year, and really into it. They're cheering for themselves every catch. They're going nuts. As soon as we cut backstage to anybody, the room just died, and you could just feel it. They're like, oh, why the fuck are you cutting away from my performance, man? Like, what's that all about?
Yeah.
So
a little.
Yeah. Not everyone is going to be 100% pleased. Yeah. True.
Yeah, I love the dads. I just have to say, I love the dads.
Oh, we did too.
They were so good.
Yeah. They're awesome, and they're instrumental in that world, and just so charming.
Oh, God, so charming.
And the idea of dads is just such a funny idea too.
I have one of their cards in my wallet right now. He's like, next time we come through town, we're going to go get some beers. We're going to go do that.
And we are going to do that.
For more information about contemporary color, you can visit contemporarycolor.com. please subscribe to the True False podcast and review us on iTunes. Join us again next week as we discuss an aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction storytelling. We want to thank Bill and Turner for the interview. This episode was produced by Steve Dawson and edited by Ryan Femuliner and Bram Sablesmith. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. We also featured a song called Into the Light by Marissa Anderson, a True False busker. Special thanks to Claire Banderas, Mary McIntyre, and Sarah Kellogg. I'm Allison Kofelt. Thanks for listening.